99.9% of all particles that are deposited in the lung are cleared by the mucociliary clearance system to the gut. So all the particles virtually that enter the lungs and deposit are cleared to the gut. Plus, nanoparticles are present in foods and increasingly will be, certainly. In the UK, the House of Lords Science and Technology Committee is undertaking a study into the effects of nanoparticles in food at the moment. If you hit the button again, please. There's the medical nanoparticles, and if you hit the button again, there's ecotoxicology, which I'll skim through at the end. I'm not an ecotoxicologist, I'm a human toxicologist. So if you move to the next slide, please. Just to give you an idea about what we're talking about here, nanoparticles are particles less than 100 nanometers, or 0.1 of a micron, where the red arrow starts here and downwards. So you can see we're in the realm of the size of proteins and molecules and atoms compared to particles, conventional particles, which are really in the size of cells and bacteria and further up. Hit the button again, and you can see the picture shows the screen of the lung in red, and you can see the nuclei in darker red, and on the top the cilia, and I've put three particles, 10 microns, 1 micron, and 0.1 of a micron, 0.1 of a micron being the top of the nanoparticle range as is normally defined. You can see that the difference is enormous in terms of in relation to cell size. If you hit the button again, you see that an electron micrograph of cilia in the basal bodies of the silicon, you can see how the 1 and 0.1 micron particles, which is the red ones that have come up, are more in scale of the ultrastructure of a cell than the cell. And you can imagine your nanoparticles going between cilia, which conventional particles wouldn't. And that's, if you hit the button one more time, that gives a 10 micron particle in relation to cell structure. So we're really talking about particles that are of a different scale, really, to conventional workplace particles. So if we move to the next slide. The starting point for any concern over these, and the starting point for my interest in particles, is that particles cause lung disease. And if you hit the button three times, you get three pictures of particle-related lung diseases. I don't want to dwell on these because they're not nanoparticles necessarily. But just to point out that I'm a particle toxicologist. I started work with the coal industry in the 70s. It's necessary to appreciate that exposure to particles does cause lung disease. In the middle is quartz or crystalline silica causing lung cancer and lung scarring. And on the right is asbestos. The slide shows mesothelioma, the unusual tumour associated with asbestos exposure. You can see how the tumour occupies the outside of the lung and the septa that divides the lung into the lobes, the white blobs the lung that you can see. And if you hit move to the next slide, please. If we think about environmental nanoparticles, and that's if you remember back to the combustion-derived nanoparticles as being the main exposure, if you take a sampler out into the street in any city, any conurbation or where there are vehicles, you can measure nanoparticles in the air very readily. And in most cities and most built-up areas, they come from the sources shown here in this pie chart. Most of them, about 60%, comes from road transport. And the rest come from various kinds of combustion. So combustion makes nanoparticles. That's the way that through the coal industry and quartz and workplace exposure, I moved to environmental nanoparticles, which we call then ultra-fine particles, which is essentially the same size, and became concerned about these in the environment. If you hit the button again, you can see how what these look like on the top. The top shows a scanning electron micrograph of a bundle of nanoparticles from the air. It looks like big particles, but if you look closely, you'll see it's actually aggregates of particles that are all mostly in the nano size range. And the TEM slide underneath shows particles of diesel collected in Glasgow. You can see how it's chains and aggregates of single nanoparticles. And she hit one more time. I just did this calculation 2 days ago for this meeting. I was thinking about what, just to try and demonstrate how many particles enter the lung normally. So I calculated the total number of combustion-derived nanoparticles that deposited theoretically in a human lung after spending 30 minutes in a busy street or 12 hours indoors. You can see the numbers of nanoparticles range from indoors about 5,000 per mil to 50,000 in a busy street. Then it gives a volume of nanoparticles per breath, breaths per minute, minutes spent in deposition in the distal lung. And if you do that calculation, you come up with 2.25 billion nanoparticles deposited in the lung in half an hour in a busy street, and 5.4 billion in 12 hours spent at home sleeping or watching the telly. Certainly, we spend more time indoors than you do probably in New Zealand because we have cooler weather, so we spend 95% of our time indoors on average. So we get lots of exposure from indoor air. So just to say that everybody that I'm looking at's lungs are full of nanoparticles, so no one need panic too much about nanoparticles, unless some nanoparticles turn out to be really much more toxic than these ones. And that's still an open question, and there may be nanoparticles that are much more toxic than suits. But I think all in all, so far, in my own studies, there are very few. And certainly not the ones that are bulk produced. They seem to be quite low toxicity. So the next slide, please. So what are the effects of all these particles? Well, it's not that they're absolutely harmless. I'm not suggesting that your lungs are full of nanoparticles and that's completely harmless. If we look at PM10 at the top, exposure is being particles less than particles around 10 microns, the way we measure particles in the general environment is called PM10. It's a mass measure based on size selection using a sampling convention that mimics what we deposit in the distal lung, really, called the PM10 convention. Now, on the bottom, you see the major outcomes that result and that are known to be associated with increasing amounts of particles in the environment. And you can see there's deaths and hospitalizations for airways disease, COPD, that's smoker's lung disease, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and asthma, and deaths and hospitalizations for cardiovascular disease. Now at this point you may go, wait a minute, the lungs, yes, particles go in the lungs, you'd expect lung disease. Where does cardiovascular disease come from? Well, us classical toxicologists did the same thing in the early 90s. We were really a bit of a loss to understand why particles would affect the cardiovascular system. If you hit the button again, so my main thesis is that PM10 effects, the effects of particles in the environment, are actually driven by these nanoparticles, combustion-derived nanoparticles, CDNP. So I've put CDNP as the driver for these effects, being the main component of PM10 responsible. And what we know is that they can cause lung inflammation and oxidative stress, and so you can understand the lung component of this, lung outcomes. But the disease which kills people from cardiovascular disease and causes hospitalizations is in fact atherosclerosis, coronary artery disease, and that's an inflammatory and oxidative stress driven condition. And in the large vessels from the heart where these lesions, these cholesterol rich lesions occur, that eventually pop, they burst, they cause a clot to form, clot moves around in the circulation and blocks the blood flow to the heart muscle, and you get a myocardial infarction or a heart attack or a stroke that goes to the brain. And lung inflammation and oxidative stress are well understood to be involved in this plaque formation and plaque rupture that actually leads to the crucial acute event. So the endothelium, the cells that line the blood vessels, the inflammatory processes in the plaque. Sorry, I hope if you hit the button again, you should be into the endothelial dysfunction, inflammatory processes, coronary artery disease, thrombosis. And that pathway can be understood to be affected by particles, just because particles also cause lung inflammation and oxidative stress. There's one other process which is important for nanoparticles. If you hit the button again, there's also a clot dissolving protein called tissue plasminogen activator, TPA, that we found in our Edinburgh is reduced by exposure to diesel with soot particles. So if you put dust form, that's able to dissolve it. If you get that one last thing, we see down the right here, the rather unusual and certainly for a particle toxicologist, one of the striking effects of nanoparticles is that they seem to be able to get to the blood and also, as I mentioned later, to the brain, which conventional particles were never considered to. And so they may actually enter the blood and then interact with cells and even atherosclerotic plaques to lead to these kinds of processes. And we don't know which is the most important pathway here, but I think most people think that the lung inflammation oxidative stress pathway is the most likely one. And the question, if we hit the button one last time, is do manufactured nanoparticles cause this effect? These kinds of effects. The only knowledge we have about the adverse effects of nanoparticles is from the PM10 literature, so it's reasonable to expect that other kinds of nanoparticles might have these effects. So we go to the next slide. And this shows, in essence, this business of translocation, which seems to be something rather peculiar to nanoparticles. You can see, if you were like me, came into particle toxicology in the 70s, then basically you had to study the lung, and then we found that we have to look at the brain and think about the blood and think about the clotting system and atherosclerotic plaques and so on, because this slide shows where nanoparticles seem to go, at least in some studies and in some experimental situations. They seem to be able to reach the brain, seem to be able to pass to the blood, and then if they get in the blood, they can, of course, go to many places around the body, but especially important, I think, are these atheromatous plaques. And there's clearance from the lung to the gut, and we don't know anything about entry of nanoparticles through the skin or gut into the body, though that might also be possible portals of entry. So I want to go through this slide and show what might occur. And this is not to suggest that these effects do occur. These are largely effects that might occur if nanoparticles pass into the blood, into the brain, and move around the body and accumulate to sufficient extent in these different tissues. So we just have to start hitting the button. And if they go to the brain in sufficient amounts, they might cause, and there are suggestions by various workers that they very likely could cause Alzheimer's disease and degenerative brain disease. In the lung, we already know they can cause effects on airways disease. If they are long and thin, we see high aspect ratio nanoparticles are harmed, and they act like asbestos, then you need to worry a bit about mesothelioma and other kinds of asbestos-related diseases. If they get to the spleen, so just keep hitting the button, if they go to the spleen, you should get immunological effects. If they affect plaques in some way, then I already mentioned that risk factor. There's some suggestion that, in fact, there's quite a few published papers showing that exposure to particles in the environment affects the heart rhythm. It's a very small effect, but certainly some groups, especially some American groups, believe it's important. In the UK, we're not so keen on this hypothesis, but they call it fatal dysrhythmia. The skin and the gut, I don't want to dwell on that because I want to really talk about the lung because that's what I know so much about, but the skin and the gut are highly immunological organs and you could be some kind of immunopathology if nanoparticles did get in there. And finally, if they get in the blood, of course, there's concern about transfer to the fetus and into embryos, and there's some data from the group in Munich that if you inject gold nanoparticles into the blood in pregnant rats, then you can find the gold nanoparticles in the placenta and in the fetus. So this is not to say that all of these things happen, but if the translocation effects have been seen in various models in animals, mostly, so there is translocation. The question is there enough to get critical doses into these tissues to cause these effects? So if we move to the next slide, just to show you that some of the work we've done in Edinburgh, these studies were carried out in collaboration with the University of Umeå in Sweden. So what you see here is a Volvo engine, and the exhaust is pumped, diluted substantially such that the person in the chamber doesn't really because they can smell a very slight smell of diesel soup. It sounds in Sweden and there's not much to do, so they're going down to take this kind of food. And that a long winter, so they don't get it. The students have paid, actually. So, and I've never had any advert. It's
still alive? The
students. Sorry?
Are they still alive?
But yeah, they're fine. Yeah. It's about the level that you get in a busy bus garage. And if you've spent any time in Hong Kong, you've had much more of an exposure to diesel in the street than you ever get here, or you've ever been to Beijing. So it's a low exposure. And we work with cardiologists. These are very interventional. You've got more to worry about from the cardiologists, in my opinion, than from the exposure. And you have to lie out in a bed and you inject these drugs into your arm, like bradykinin, that actually stimulate the endothelium. So if you hit the buttons just to make all the figures come up, please, you can see that when you look, the top figure shows the release of this clot dissolving enzyme called tissue plasminogen activator, or TPA, and you can see that the release caused by injection of this drug, which is called bradykinin, into the arm of these people. Is much less after diesel. So somehow or other, the cells that line the blood vessels in your arm are affected after you inhale diesel soup. So, and it's a very profound effect. This is a substantial risk factor for acute coronary death. And the lower one shows, again, after breathing air or breathing diesel, the ST segment depression. Now this is gobbledygook to you and me, but the cardiologists they tell us that this is the blood flow through the muscle in the ventriculum of the heart. So there's less blood flow through the ST segment depression, which means less blood flow through the heart during the exposure. So there are very profound effects to be found on the cardiovascular system. Again, and this is considered to be an individual risk factor for a sudden coronary death. If we go to the next slide, this experiment kind of is in the same kind of idea, but we did this in mice, and these are mice called APOE mice that develop atherosclerotic plaques. The first two pictures show basically the aorta or the some of the vessels that near the heart. From a mouse, they're very small, but they've been shown here. It opened up and stained to show the fat in the vessel wall. And you can see that after diesel on the right here, there's more red, there's more fat in the wall than there is in animals exposed to saline. These were delivered to the animals by instillation into their lung on 6 occasions. And if you hit the button again, you see these lesions, these atherosclerotic lesions, are very marked in these mice. The arrows point to 2 of them. You can see they're bulging out into the lumen of the vessel. And you can quantify these, and if you hit the button one last time, you'll see that if you look at the size of the lesions expressed as per unit area of the vessel itself, there's much more lesion in the case of the animals given the diesel soup and given saline. So in these animals, the actual lesion of atherosclerosis, this is the lesion that develops and pops open and releases the products into the blood that causes the clot, it is worsened by diesel exposure. So there's no doubt about the impact on the cardiovascular system in this kind of model. You can't do this kind of study in humans, obviously. But these animal studies are fairly persuasive that the particles can do this kind of thing. So if you hit the next one, we start with combustion-derived nanoparticles. This takes us to the manufacture of nanoparticles and ask the question, what should we be studying? Where do we look for clues as to what we should be studying? What should we be looking at? Well, we only have, as I said before, the PM10, the environmental particle literature, to go on, really. And if you start hitting the buttons, the first is the PM10 literature tells us that the PM10 is a complex mixture, but the toxicologists certainly in the PM10 community believe that the combustion-derived nanoparticles are the main driver of these effects. Secondly, that the diesel exposure literature picks out certain populations of people that are highly exposed, like truck drivers and miners. There are high levels of diesel in mines, because of the pumps and so on. There are bulk nanoparticle industries as well, and finally there are dusty trees. Now what do these tell us that we should be looking at to study nanoparticle effects? And so they basically point out two things to study, the lungs and the cardiovascular system. The thickness of the lungs tells us how big an effect we're seeing. So if the lungs are very thick, there's a very clear impact. And what we see is effects on the lungs, and we see effects on the cardiovascular system. They come out very clearly. And especially for nanoparticles, which is the PM10 literature, not the conventional dusty trees, which are not nano in general, we see this impact on the cardiovascular system. But we do see effects on the cardiovascular system in other industries. What we don't see is any effects from the PM10 literature on the brain and on the liver and the kidney. And much of this literature is based on death certificates. So we don't find people dying from neurological causes. We find them dying from respiratory, cardiorespiratory causes. We don't see brain, we don't see liver, we don't see kidney. That's not to say there's not an effect there, but it doesn't come through in the PM literature or in any of these other industries. Having said that, there are conditions in coal miners who have massive exposures to dust, and you have no idea. They have grams and grams of particles in their lungs. You do find some particles in the liver, and you do find some in the spleen, and you do get something called liver and the spleen silicosis and silicotic workers, but their exposure to particles is immense. I don't think you can really take that as a general guide for the effects of nanoparticles.